Whiskey. We can't start this podcast without giving a massive shout out to Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
The Wayne Rooney from New Zealand, who delightfully sent us a couple of bottles of his home brewed whiskey. Now, I don't know much about whiskey at all. I'm a vice beer kind of guy, but you said it was really nice, Jonathan.
Yeah, I thought it was tasty. Andrew is probably the biggest whiskey drinker here.
It sort of tastes, there's a big like top note of honey when you get that first mouthful.
Right.
It's not got too much of a kick to it, I found, as well. It went down quite easily, which is quite welcome.
That's nice and smooth.
Yeah.
That's good on Monday morning, isn't it? The right kind of Monday morning drink.
Whiskey.
It was nearly 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that's okay, though.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. Pubs had opened.
I thought it was really nice. I mean, I don't really like bourbon at the best of times, but it was nice. I could drink. In fact, I have been drinking it.
Can you focus?
No, just a really chubby humour.
So, yeah, thanks a lot, Wayne Rooney. That was really, really nice and kind
really
of you.
Really kind, yeah.
Cheers, Wayne.
And if anybody else wants to send us any alcoholic drinks in response to this free podcast, you know where to go. Meanwhile, this is Season 3, Episode 20 of the Tux Radar Podcast. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
Awesome. In this episode, we'll be talking about Ubuntu 11.10's release. The second thing in the news, which is...
The second thing is LibreOffice coming to Android and browsers.
Yep, we'll be talking about that. We've got our discoveries. We've got our wonderful, sparkling new Rants and Raves section. And, of course, lots of great comments in the open ballot. After you've listened to this, why not, as well as sending us beer, subscribe to the magazine that we make, Linux Format. 136 pages per month of awesome Linux goodness. Or 130, Andrew's looking rather confused.
It's more like this.
Yeah, thereabouts. And you can subscribe at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer. So let's get straight into the news then. And Ubuntu 11.10 has been released.
Excellent. It's still brilliant. I mean, as much as everybody is going to have a go about Ubuntu, and everybody can, you know.
I'm going to.
It's a wonderful distribution that's done a hell of a lot for Linux adoption. I mean, it looks awesome. I do think, you know, just going through that HTML5 demo that they had on their site for all of its features.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Playing with that. It's so nice to see a distribution that recognizes the importance of attracting new users. You know, people who might never have used Linux before might use that demo and think, damn, this is quite good.
Because as well, that's the kind of thing that's not, it wasn't just some VNC linked to some virtual machine or anything. It was entirely written in HTML5. That doesn't take 5 minutes. That takes days and days of effort by very skilled people. So,
yeah,
really good job.
So the new features include a new login screen, of course, LightDM.
Yeah.
The software center's been updated as well. It's looking pretty polished.
It's amazing.
And Thunderbird has replaced Evolution as the default mail client. So Evolution was a lot more like business-oriented, wasn't it? Whereas Thunderbird is more a home user sort of thing. And of course, updates to Unity, but we'll be talking about that later on as well. I was quite surprised, though, that Ubuntu is still number one on the DistroWatch charts, because I think we all expected Mint to have taken over there by now.
Mint did for a while, didn't it?
Did it?
Yeah,
they did. Although, Ubuntu dropped down to third.
Really? I looked, because you can, on the distrowatch.com site, you can choose the time span for the data. And I looked in the last 30 days, Ubuntu is way, way ahead of Mint.
Because of the pending release.
Because of the release, yeah. But it's interesting that...
I think it's a really good distribution. I installed it last night. And while I'm not a big fan of Unity, I'm a KD person, you know, I can see what they're trying to do. And it seems to do it a bit better than GNOME Shell, to my mind. I don't like the launch icons. I don't think they're on the bar on the left. I don't think they're in fitting. I much prefer something like the crystal icons on the KD desktop.
Yeah, I was writing the disk pages for Linux Format issue 152, which of course will have a special exclusive triple booting Ubuntu disk on it.
You are awesome, Mike.
And it was quite hard to do. I was writing a guide telling new users what to do. One is, how do you open the software center? And I said, well, click on the yellow bag icon on the left.
It's got it isn't obvious, is it? Yeah, up. You're right.
Well, you know, it's not clear. If it was a package, then it's a package. If it was, you know, if it said app on it, but the description had to be quite vague.
That's the only one, though. The internet is that a globe? And home folder is a folder.
It is a folder, yeah.
And I think the rest of them all sort of make sense.
I I have, unusually for me, given I've been trying out some different desktops in the last few days. I tried XFCE. I've been playing with window managers for a tutorial and the upcoming issue. I tried Unity out for a little while as well. I really couldn't get on with it. I don't know why it was, but it just felt broken and it felt slow and awkward on my computer. And very quickly, I've given it up and left it and gone back to GNOME Shell, which I was using before. And it feels much more polished and stable to me.
You've got into that tile window manager mindset. I quite like the fact that you can still keep things as windows, kind of.
What, in GNOME Shell?
Unity. Oh, in Unity. No, in Unity.
You can in GNOME Shell as well.
I know you can.
It's just the same, and there's no difference really between them.
Okay, okay.
But my experience of Unity was it was slow and it was sloppy, and I was really unimpressed by it. But I think I must be in the minority for that release.
Well, the 2D mode seems to work well, because that's what I was using last night.
Yeah, that seemed better than the 3D mode when I used it, but it still felt awkward and clunky to me.
But it's still got that lovely compositing and stuff like that, which I don't know how they've managed to do.
On the dash,
Lovely shading.
Lovely eye candy stuff.
Andrew, how did you find it this morning? You said you were installing and trying it out.
Well, we're really jumping the gun of the open ballot here, but I really like it. I think it's a big improvement on last time.
Cool.
Meanwhile, LibreOffice is coming to Android and web browsers.
I didn't see this news article at all. I really didn't.
Did you not?
How the hell are they going to do that?
It's awesome. You know, GTK has a HTML5 backend.
I remember them.
That's apparently what they're using. Apparently, they're rendering LibreOffice using GTK 3's HTML5 backend.
Is it stupid of me to suggest that it'll take like 3 days to load, and then
another two days
to type in the first. Yeah, but I just, even with an HTML5 backend.
I know, when I've seen demos, not of LibreOffice, but of GCalc, which admittedly entirely different level of application, looked really responsive and really quick. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how it works.
I can see it working well with something like GCalc, but LibreOffice.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, the question I have is, LibreOffice still looks a bit funny. There are still strange things on the interface that don't quite fit GTK, and you can still see bits of its original VCL, SAL interface poking through.
Yeah.
Put it on a Mac and it looks a bit weird as well.
Maybe if they're going for this, where they're trying to get it on tablets and in browsers and doing it this way, it's meaning that there's going to have to be a massive concerted effort to tidy up the interface.
Could be,
And to get it all consistent.
I think that this whole direction is a mistake. What I'd like to see is a lightweight word processing application that is easy to use, has 90% of the functions you need, so really just basic stuff like marking up text, bold, spell checking, and that is all.
Abbey Word?
Abbey Word.
Well, Abbey Word is Abbey a Word. Really close fit. Yeah, it is, but I'd like to see it in a modern UI.
Yeah, it never felt right to me.
I'd like to see it in a modern UI shell. Hmm. So that, something that's like Abbey Word Redux or something like that.
Yeah, Abbey Word hasn't been updated for a while, I think.
Yeah, but, I mean, I hate to use an OS X application as an example, but there's one called Bean.
Bean is very good looking,
which basically encapsulates Apple's own text editing widget with the stuff that I just mentioned. And something like the K-Dot component from K-Office could easily just make a Bean copy where you've just got just a few of the basic tools to write what most of us use. I never use half the stuff that it has options for. And that would work on a mobile. But why on earth are you going to need grammar checking if you're writing something on a mobile device? The thought of it makes me go cold.
The thought of it starting up on a device with a 1 gigahertz chip. Although, that said, they're talking about getting this done by the end of 2012 or the start of 2013. So by that point, we'll have slightly more RAM and faster chips in our mobile devices.
To afford, super quad-core tablet.
Yeah.
And they'll all cost like $30.
Absolutely, yeah.
Final Writer, do you remember that on the Amiga?
Oh, yes.
That was really good. Just bring Final Writer back.
I had Wordworth, and I remember loading that over four floppy disks.
That'd be like the LibreOffice of the day.
Yeah. I had to swap floppy disks multiple times just to load it. Those were great days. We should give a mention, of course, to the passing of Dennis Ritchie as well. Who died on October the 12th, age 70. Of course, he created the C programming language and co-created Unix, and he was arguably one of the most influential people in the history of computing.
Yeah, he's influenced all of our jobs trying to explain how to pronounce ETC.
But I was thinking, one of the co-creators of Unix, and when you say Unix, you think Unix, old 70s operating system, but Unix is modern. Unix is everywhere. If 99% of the smartphones in the world are running iOS and Android, they're running Unix.
Yeah.
We're all running Unix ourselves. Massive data centers, servers are running
websites.
Yeah, Solaris, AIX. Unix is the standard. It really Unix is the operating system of the world, and Microsoft has a fair few desktop clients out there, but it's just not comparable to how pervasive the idea of Unix is.
That's cool enough. That alone would make him an immortal. But C.
Yeah. It's the language.
The concept of taking something and writing it and making it portable so you can run it on, you know, different architectures.
Yeah. That idea at the time, a language that is high level and yet is portable and yet still lets you play around with individual bits in bytes and poke stuff into memory and work with pointers. It's just...
Yeah.
You can see why it became the systems programming language, so rest
in peace. And C++ still is, you know, to a large part.
Yeah.
For those reasons too, yeah.
Following on from hearing about the news, I went on a little bit of a Google hunting session, came across the Unix Haters Handbook, which was quite a funny book from maybe the early mid-90s. A bunch of Microsoft and Sun people and also Unix hackers and people. Just like quite comical, but also quite serious technical complaints about C. And it's interesting to read, and some bits are really interesting, some bits are a bit outdated. And it's well worth checking out Eric Raymond's comments on it.
On C?
He commented on the Unix Haters Handbook in 2008.
I see.
How the complaints had worked out as time had passed based on Linux and changes. So if you're looking for a bit of a diversion for an afternoon, well, I recommend those two directions.
Okay, it's time for Discovery of the Fortnight. Who wants to go first?
Me.
Andrew. Yeah. Thank you.
Mine's awesome.
It usually is.
If you put... In Google, if you write the words Richard Stallman, it auto-completes the search field for you, and it auto-completes it to Richard Stallman is an idiot.
Really? Has Richard Stallman been Google-bombed?
Are you sure that's not because you've typed it before?
That's in your search history. A title of an article you wrote. GNU.org.
Possibly. Oh well, that rather takes the shine off the discovery.
No,
because
no,
it does sound like the sort of thing I would do. But it made me laugh.
It's
anyway.
Still cool.
I was looking around for software for the disc, and I came across again an application we all know about, PTV.
Oh yeah,
the video editor, or PTV. I don't know. Well, I thought it was interesting because on their front page, next to the logo, they've got a little audio symbol which links to an OGG so you can hear how the name of the program's pronounced.
Oh, genius. Oh. How is it pronounced?
I don't know because I can't hear it because I don't have any sound. But I just don't have any headphones at the office. But doesn't that kind of stands out to me? Like if you like the Magaya situation, if you have to tell people how to pronounce your pronoun, think of a better name.
PTV even worse in that it's P little I, T little I, V little I.
Oh yeah, it's swapping capitalization and it's got pity in it. Yeah, I mean, you know. Oh, I thought Shotwell is a great name for an application because it's got shot, taken photograph. It's got well, positivity. It makes sense. PTV, guys, no. And that's my discovery.
Okay, that's brilliant. John?
I have two quick discoveries. One is that I was complaining last week about tracker search, or last time about tracker search not seeming to work properly in the Gnome Documents app. And I think it may have been because I didn't have my XDG user folders set properly. After a fresh install on Arch.
What are your XDG user folders?
So when you install, your home folder has pictures, videos, all set by default.
Yeah.
The paths are XDG is makes the paths relative, so it can just be a variable in applications, and that's what Tracker uses by default. So I needed to run the pro script, the command line tool, XDG, there's update or something. You know, that doesn't happen on Fedora or anything where it's done by scratch, but on Arch you kind of have to.
So there is a solution.
Extra step. So there's a solution and it does seem to work now.
Okay.
So happy update there.
That is good.
Yeah, I'm pleased.
I really like this idea of Google Docs being on your local drive in the same kind of way as Dropbox.
And also integrated with all my local documents as well.
Is
and
it I can Google endorsed? I mean, do they mind?
No. I think it just uses the API, so presumably Google don't mind.
Right.
But then, you know, I can search through all of my documents at once, and the app looks really nice. Yeah. Really good looking application, so it's pretty cool.
I looked to try and get something like that working on KDE, but couldn't find a solution. So
yeah, we'll see how this goes. Try it properly when we get back after this. And my second one is that apparently I heard on You and Yours at lunchtime, it is currently the height of mushroom picking season.
Oh, really?
And there was a very famous mushroom picking book by a chap called Robert Phillips, perhaps, something like that. We'll put the link on the website, and it has over 1,400. Different photos of different types of mushrooms and descriptions, and tells you whether they're edible or not. And he's now 75 and recently made it all available online for free.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So if you want to go mushroom picking, take care.
Yeah,
don't eat anything you're not sure about, but check out the free guide online.
I've been mushroom picking and I really didn't have the confidence to choose anything but like the most obvious mushroom.
Yeah,
it's really scary. Scary.
Apparently, a few other mushrooms that grow very well in the UK, like something called sex, which is called something else on the continent, is massively popular on the continent. And, you know, they sell
sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, sells for a fortune, like £25 a pound or something like that. And it grows everywhere here in the UK. So with a bit of knowledge, you can go and get yourself some gourmet mushrooms.
Très bien.
I've had an idea that can make us millions of pounds. But because I'm generous, I'll tell all our listeners as well. Why don't we make an application for mobile phones for Android and possibly iOS that lets you take photos of mushrooms and then it tells you what sort it is? So then you can find out if you're going to die by eating it.
Because if we'll be liable.
If we get it wrong, there'll be a legal minefield there.
Oh, damn.
Plus, how difficult must those algorithms be to write to match pictures to pictures?
Well, they're already out there because on Spooks they can just look at people's faces and then like identify
if it's on Spooks. But
there is a really good the RSPCB website has got a bird finder.
Royal Society for Protection of Cruelty to Child Birds.
Royal Society RSPB. That's right. They've got a really good bird species finder. So you ask you a question, how many wings has it got? Has it got a beak? You know, how many eyes has it got? But I can't quite remember what the question is.
In your garden?
But it does actually find the bird for you, and you could do that with a mushroom checker.
Yeah, you could.
You know,
yeah.
Has it got spots on? Is it got a gooey, horrible licorice smell?
Does it ooze black?
Yeah.
Gel down your hand.
Go on, eat it. Has it been sent to you in a bottle of whiskey from New Zealand? And my discovery is only half a discovery, really, but it's still useful if you've got kids who are learning about mathematics. When I was at school, I was rubbish at fractions and long division. I haven't found a solution for long division, but there's a really good educational application in KDE called K Brucks, or KBRUCH.
Yeah, that must come from Bruchteil, which is German for fraction.
Excellent. Mm. Awesome. So have I pronounced it correctly?
K Brucks.
Brucks.
Or something. Hi, Effie.
Hey, it's Effie.
Hey. Effie, you said you weren't going to come because you don't have a discovery, and we're in the middle of discovery of the week.
So, all it does is it tests your, gives you simple questions on addition of fractions, comparison, calculation, factorization as well. It gives you, and you have to answer simple questions. And it's really nice UI. It's really quick and easy to use. And I think it could really help if you have trouble with fractions.
Awesome.
Cool.
Bruchteil. Is that literally broken part?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
That's cool, because algebra comes from the Arabic, meaning the resolution of broken parts.
Really? Wow.
I'm nodding, yeah.
That's amazing.
We share so much knowledge on this podcast.
Well, Andrew does.
That's the whiskey. The whiskey made me Andrew. 10% cleverer.
Hey, and Effie has just joined us, because I think he's got a discovery.
He's got his Android phone out.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I have a legal discovery. This.
Oh, is this to do with your Harry Potter book from last year? Is it gone?
Have you got a letter through the post?
No, I still got it. It hasn't been removed from my phone yet. So it must be legal. It's on the Android market. Anyway, it doesn't matter. that's not the discovery. I discovered that I'm closer to Mexico now. I just found an application for the Android phone which contains the Mexican Constitution, the complete Mexican Constitution. So I can now read the whole Mexican Constitution on my Android phone.
I thought you knew it off by heart.
No. Oh. No, I'm not.
Proper, I'm not quite so impressed.
I'm not
now.
A proper Mexican. So, yeah.
So you can consult that if you're on the street and you have to make an important decision
if,
about.
If I'm stopped by the police in Mexico, I can refer to my phone and then find my individual and but write and all
the,
that.
The problem is because it's just on the Android market, which doesn't seem to have a massive amount of QA at the moment. It could all be lies. It could be completely fake. It could be the constitution of Guatemala, but with Guatemala changed to Mexico.
It has a Mexican flag.
Are there like are there different constitutions, and then you can rate them like out of five stars?
Yeah. Recommend them to your friends.
Yeah, recommend to your friends. Yeah,
like
that's how they are.
Awesome. Thanks, Effie, for popping by. So,
so dismissive.
Anytime.
That brings us to the halfway point or so in this issue's in this episode. Still to come is Rants and Raves, Speak Your Brains, and the Open Ballot.
Great, so now it's time for our brand new, well, almost brand new section.
Yeah, second
issue.
Simmeringly new.
It's still pleasantly so. We've still got stuff to rant and rave about. So I'm going to pass it over to Graham now. He's going to rant for 1 minute about Amarok.
That's right, I'm going to pick on Amarok.
Excellent, well, go for it.
Okay, Amarok is KDE's default music player, and it seems to have taken all of its user interface design inspiration from iTunes, which is one of the most hideous applications on the planet. iTunes has got so many functions. It's not just a music player, it's not just an app store, it's not just a podcast subscription tool, it's not just a portal for Apple's world of corporate gluttony. And Amarok is the equivalent in the open source world. It's this sprawling mess of lyrics, of Wikipedia pages, of terrible collections of podcasts. It's a usability nightmare. If you put my uncle in front of it, he wouldn't have a clue what's happening or where to click. Music should be about escapism. It should be about listening to something while you're either concentrating on something or you just want to relax. And Amarok is the antithesis of all those things. It rips music to shreds and leaves it in shatters as you try and find some horrible disparate lyrics pointing at you at the screen. It really should have a complete overhaul and be completely zenified and turned into something decent.
Excellent.
That was one of the best rants. I don't think you actually breathed at all. In that time. That was amazing.
I love the use of the word "senify" at the end of it. It encapsulated what it should be. Maybe we should turn this into just a minute sometime and there should be no repetition or hesitation in the minute. okay, well, Mike's going to rave now.
I'd like to rave about a very specific subject here. Get ready.
Ready?
Linux.
Oh.
Linux absolutely rules. When you're working with Linux all the time, as we do, it's quite easy to find the flaws and have a grumble about them. But a couple of weeks ago, I got a new laptop, and it came with Windows 7 installed naturally. There was no way really around that, not for the cheap Asus I wanted to buy anyway. But I booted up Windows because I'll keep it on for testing and playing around businesses. And it's just so difficult. There's something always happening. You can't delve into it. I cleaned out all the usual trialware and nagware and crapware that came with it, but the hard drive light still flashes randomly and strange things happen in the background. And I look at the process manager and there's like 42183.exe running that I have no idea what it does. I put Linux on there, boom, it's all clear, simple. I know what everything's doing. When it's idle, the hard disk light isn't flashing, the network light isn't flashing. I know it's just sitting there doing nothing at all. With Windows, I've got no idea what's going on at all under the hood, and it's quite scary. So Linux, epic win.
Awesome. Well done. Can I just say one thing that I really hate about Windows?
Mm-hmm.
And I use it once every kind of 6 weeks or 2 months, and it's in the bedroom. So I turn on the PC to boot into Windows to do something. It gets to a certain point and then it says installing updates on the install that I didn't finish on the shutdown whenever the last time I turned it on. So it then spends 20 minutes installing those updates. I get to the Windows desktop, I do whatever quick thing I have to do and shut it down. And then it says installing updates 0 of 39. I have to wait a whole 45 minutes for it and turn the damn machine off.
Yeah.
It's so crap.
Yeah.
Look at that, listener. Two rants for the price of one.
We should have chosen Windows, but that's just an easy target. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that was fun. Look forward to doing it again in 2 weeks' time.
Brilliant. Let's move straight on then to Speak Your Brains. This is the bit where you, listeners, can email me, mike.saunders@futurenet.com, with Speak Your Brains in the subject line, and I will speak your brain for you on air. This episode, it's the turn of Richard Klinker, who says, awesomely, and quite related to what we were just talking about, I just wanted to speak my brains regarding my new HP Mini 110 with Intel Atom N550 netbook and Linux. As you'd expect, my new netbook came with Windows 7 Starter pre-installed. What a boneheaded idea. a 32-bit crippled OS on awesome 64-bit hardware. That got overwritten straight away with Mepis 11 64-bit. Everything worked out of the box. Once I'd installed the Licorix kernel from the Mepis community repo, huge thanks to Mepis community, and set swappiness to 10 from the default 60, it's even quick enough for a bit of light Super Tux cart. KDE4 desktop effects are no bother. In conclusion, netbooks originally came out with Linux installed, and they're still way better set up as Linux machines now as intended. HP and others are doing their customers no favours by supplying great hardware bundled with a nasty cut-down OS. I've got a fully functioning 64-bit system that I can take anywhere with me, and I didn't have to spend pretty much the initial purchase price again to supposedly upgrade to a proper version of Windows 7. Linux for the win, especially as I'm sending this from my netbook tethered to my N900.
Awesome.
That's really cool.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were just having a rant about Windows 7. Windows 7 started. It's just like baby software. I mean,
you can't change your background on it, can you?
That's something ridiculous.
Yeah,
like
you're right. I don't think you can.
You're stuck with me in the Green Hills over.
Yeah.
Whatever they include.
Whatever they include in Windows 7, yeah. But I think that's a good point. I've put Zubuntu. It's quite ambitious for him going with KDE, but I've put Zubuntu on various netbooks, and it flies, it screams, it makes the netbooks really usable.
Yeah, yeah.
So, thanks. Please get in touch. Let us know what you're thinking, listeners. mike.saunders@futurenet.com. Subject line, speak your brains.
It's time for open ballots.
Yay!
And we've more or less preempted the topic of this discussion. When we were speaking a little bit about Ubuntu 11.10, because the question we asked this fortnight is, has Ubuntu 11.10 fixed the problems with Unity?
No.
Well, that's the short version. For the long version, would anybody like to chip in? John, you said you quite liked it, didn't you?
No, I disliked it. The software center was, the software center was excellent, really big improvement.
It is lovely, actually.
Unity as a whole, I found slow, sluggish, awkward, broken. I had dual monitors set up and I tried to do the workspace switcher and the tearing was terrible. I couldn't see one workspace from the other. It was really, really bad.
Weren't you using the 2D version though, rather than 3D?
No, that was on the 3D version.
Oh, no. So yeah. I'll try and say something clever that looks like I've been paying attention and just get it
wrong. Does it work then on two screens?
It gives you, the desktop spans both screens, so your four desktops are like four giant desktops.
Oh, right.
Which is okay, but I wish the workspace switcher worked properly. That's just one gripe. The whole thing, though, felt broken, and the general experience felt subpar to me.
There's been a lot of complaints.
What about Unity? I've seen a lot of good things said about Unity.
I've seen lots of people complaining about bugs. There's loads and loads of bug reports about them causing problems.
I just find it really complicated to navigate. There's so many ways, it seems, to launch applications. I mean, I wanted to find GIMP on Ubuntu, and I think I had to click the Unity Ubuntu button in the top left, and then there was like Photo Manager and Music Player, so I had to go into more applications, and then I had to select Graphics, and then that showed a few of the graphics apps installed and some available for download, so I had to click Expand to show that, and you know, for just trying to explore what's installed.
I opened up a terminal and typed whatever it was.
Yeah, I can see that it's quite useful that you can just, once you know everything about it, you can just press a button and tap writing GIMP, but a lot of people see that as a retrograde step. They just want to be able to click on the familiar icons they know, and they seem to be buried away so deeply. The old start menu metaphor back in Windows 95 seems quite simple. Category icon.
I really like the look of a new elementary launcher, Slingshot. It looks better than NameShell and Unity in that it is literally just an app launcher. You click the apps button, shows you, it's like OS X Lions launcher. And you get all your apps up on the screen. It's paginated and you can search. You can either scroll through or you can search, and it just launches apps, and it does it really well.
Well, that thing in Plasma Active, the KDE's netbook version, where you could actually pull down a border from the top.
That also and all of the apps appear. Very similar.
That seemed really nice.
Very similar. Yeah. It's just much more simple. It's not trying to do too much.
Yeah, you're right. It's just the job is just to launch the app.
This is not a comment about anything, but when a lot of the work is done for free, or you know, you're trying to do it in a short space of time, you should really consider how much you can really do. Just make something really simple and really good. Don't try and be clever about it. Make it simple, make it do the job, make it work.
Yeah.
And that's one of the awesome comments that's made people like Hugh say things like, I love Jonathan Roberts.
I think he's great.
Thank you, Hugh.
Yeah, not a lot of love for Unity, so I think we'll probably start with the few people that like it. Hawkins says, hi, I use Unity in my small screen netbook and it works just fine. After a few days of using it, I think that it's more stable, which was my main complaint about Unity in 11.4. I'm pretty happy with it.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about upgrading my netbook from Mint to Unity just to give it a go.
Nah, don't.
No?
Nah.
Okay.
Stick with Mint.
Hi, name Shell.
Neil P says, it works for me. I wouldn't say it's absolutely perfect, though, but what is? It can still be a little buggy, but no real showstoppers. I installed it in VirtualBox on my wife's 27-inch iMac the other day, and it looked awesome. Really slick and crisp. It looked so much nicer than Snow Leopard. Canonical.
What about Unity?
Canonical are definitely heading the right way. Oh, well. Yeah, Pensive Penguin says it's a big improvement. Slicker and more stable, but there's still a way to go. There is a criticism there, so we'll come back to that in a bit.
One thing I think we should say about Unity that is actually really good in this release is the 2D version. Like you were saying, we tried it out in VirtualBox, and now you can use Unity without 3D acceleration.
You can, although I find that the resize handles of some windows in the bottom right and bottom left corners are 1 pixel, which is extremely hard to work with. I don't understand
this. This is something they've just fixed in the new GNOME release, GNOME 3.2, where the actual appearance of the resize gap on the window border is only 1 pixel, really small, but they made the grabbable area 4 or 5 pixels.
Yeah,
so it looks good, but it's still very functional as well. Really great solution.
I don't get how that got into Unity 2D at all. I find it ridiculous. Can't resize windows properly.
They don't want you to resize windows though, do they? They want you to use them full screen,
right?
Get used to this new and more efficient paradigm,
because everyone's running a netbook.
Interesting. Yeah. I wasn't planning to mention it, but in the next issue of Linux Format, we've actually got a usability test between GNOME 3.2, Unity in 11.10, and KDE 4.7 as the kind of test subject. And Mayank, who wrote it, actually took the desktops down to people who'd not used a Linux desktop before, as well as people in his lug, and got people to give their impressions of, ask them to do simple tasks.
Can't wait to read that.
Sounds great. I'm going to buy that next issue then. Definitely.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the results are.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andrew.
No, that's cool. I quite like the way that there's more than one way to launch an application.
It is good.
Because it means that if you can't... Because when you come to things through different ways, different thought processes make you want to launch an application. So depending on what you're doing at the time, there's a way to do it.
No, that's...
It just seems to make sense. But I think really the best way that we've found so far is applications, categories,
graphics,
you know,
Office,
LibreOffice.
Yeah.
It just seems to work.
Yeah, they could simplify it a bit, I think.
Anonymous Root Penguin says, Unity was the reason I switched from Ubuntu to Fedora in April, and I've happily been living with GNOME Shell for the last few months. I decided to give Unity another try with 11.10. After a day of using it, I found it hard to use and nowhere near as fast and slick as GNOME Shell. Luckily, GNOME Shell is just an apt get install away in the new Ubuntu, as it's in the official repositories. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool, I'm going to try it. I'm going to see if it's better.
I don't know how good a version of GNOME Shell it is, though. He sounded quite happy with it, I guess.
Yeah. Quite a lot of people have mentioned that they've given up on Ubuntu and gone to either Mint or Debian.
I think that's interesting. Yeah, I would have expected people just say, well, I'll go to Kubuntu then, you know, or Zubuntu. I want a GTK, simple GTK desktop like GNOME used to be, and just make that minor change. It's interesting that people are jumping to other distros.
Well, but here's
Here's perhaps the reason why not. Hyauj says, people forget that when 11.10 came out, it didn't just mean a new Unity release, but other respins as well. I switched from GNOME to KDE after Unity took over, and the classic desktop still had issues. Thanks to changes in 11.10, I've switched from Kubuntu to Mint 11. Mm. Mm. I love Jonathan Roberts. I think he's great.
Again?
Why did that come up in this comment, Fred?
Because you're great. Don't question it, man. Just,
you know, the bottle fills up and fills up and fills up, and then I guess the point it just overflows.
I like that metaphor.
Oh, here's something that somebody said. Yes, Neil P. No, not Neil P.
We've had him.
Pensive Penguin. Pensive Penguin again says, my hunch is that all Canonical really needs to do to appease disgruntled Ubuntu users is make Unity more customizable. I can't upgrade my other machines until the single window version of GIMP comes along, though. Trying to use the multi-window version of GIMP with Unity's global menu is enough to cause breakdowns.
That must be a mess. Not tried that.
Now, one thing that I noticed when 11.04 came out was that some applications work well with the global menu and some didn't have it integrated. So, for example, it works in Firefox and AbbeyWord, but it still doesn't in LibreOffice. And LibreOffice is a big, you know, big flagship.
It's in the default boot toolbar thing.
It's not some third-party thing that I've downloaded from some website.
Yeah.
So it just feels, and I had high hopes that everything would feel all integrated and work properly, but it just still doesn't.
Probably my biggest gripe about Unity is that global menu and the fact that if you don't hover over it, it shows you the name.
Yeah,
and then you hover it over and the menu appears. It's ugly and it's not usable. It's
the opposite of usable. It's the opposite of newbie friendly. It presumes knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Like, unless you hover over it, you just don't know where's the file menu? How do I open a new document?
So what's the consensus then? It seems overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah, it's better, but it's still not great. So an improvement, but in answer to the question, no. The problems in Unity have not been fixed.
There's more cloud stuff as well in this release, isn't there? I remember reading a couple of days ago that they've had to withdraw the bookmark syncing because it doesn't work.
Really? In the new version?
Yeah, I think maybe, I don't know what it syncs against, maybe bookmarks in the cloud.
Then there's also bookmark syncing built into Firefox and Chrome. And,
yeah, and Google.
So you can install whatever app you want and get it on your phone and on different computers. So it's not a big loss, but in terms of polish on the release, it's not impressive.
I think the best sort of summing up comes from Jerubi, who says, it's effort in the right direction. I'm not a big Unity or Ubuntu fan. I'm currently typing this from Slackware with Fluxbox, but I appreciate the effort that Canonical is putting into it. But I appreciate the effort Canonical is putting into, this seems to be their goal, a sleek, user-friendly desktop environment that can show macOS or Windows users that Linux doesn't have to look hacked together and all about green-lettered terminal screens. You mentioned many times on the show that one of Linux's main detractors is its reputation as being geeky and elite. Unity is a good effort to disprove that. I'll end on a fanboy note and remind you that all of you on your show are awesome.
Thanks. Does that include me?
No.
No, I thought not.
You're rubbish. He specifically says Mike is rubbish.
Yeah.
So I reckon that's pretty much what people seem to say. Yeah. It's a step in the right direction, and they really are genuinely trying to put in lots and lots of effort in.
And we've always said that we'd wish developers were braver and actually tried to innovate a bit more.
Now they have. We said, "Oh well, I'm just going to change. I'll go to Debian instead."
So good luck to them. KDE is awesome.
How many episodes have you waited to just say that?
A long time.
Right, excellent. I think that about wraps it up for this podcast.
Can I just mention, just to incite some more flame wars, that...
great, I always want more flame wars.
Linux Format is now on Apple's newsstand, which means you can get it on your iPhone and iPad and touch devices. And there's a free issue as well, which is the cloud issue from only two issues ago. I'll put the link to the app in the notes if anyone is interested, if they've secretly got an iPad.
Very secretly. Yes.
None of us would do that.
No way, Jose. But of course, you can get Linux Format on Android too. Before we get flamed to death, yeah. You can get it on Zinio. We love Android.
Of course, we love Android. It'd be great to do an app for Android, and I'm sure Paul will look into that.
But in the meantime, there is Zinio, like Mike said, and if you subscribe to the magazine, you get access to every single PDF.
Yeah, doesn't I think the PDF's the best?
Yeah, there are loads of ways to get.
It's not as convenient, but it's all new stuff, and we're looking into making it better.
Yeah. Don't
choice.
Hate.
There's choice. Choice is good.
Choice is good. Don't hate us for trying to make the magazine survive and make a bit of money so we can keep making the mag.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Cool. Excellent. Well said, Graham. So thanks, listeners. Thanks for all your contributions. And we will speak to you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios. Bye.